folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, where we help you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want, not the life that other people want you to live or not the life that the government wants you to live, but the life that you want, and to strengthen your resolve in good times or bad. This is episode number 13. It's August 31st, Monday. Can't believe August is already gone. But anyway, thank you for tuning in to episode 13. Got a fun show for you. The last show that I did, we talked about how to help our kids become more self-sufficient. And what the primary subject matter in the last show was whether kids should take martial arts and what that does to help them not only get fit, but get into the mindset of self-defense and self-sufficiency. There's a lot of commonalities in the martial arts world. Today we're going to continue to talk about our young people. And the two primary topics that we are going to cover today is what to teach our kids, how to prepare them for living a survival-minded life. Survival is also about the next generation. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about ourselves, and a lot of the other podcasts and a lot of the other shows out there on survivalism, we're talking about how to prepare ourselves. That's good. We should be preparing ourselves, but let's not forget about the next generation, and that's our young people. What are we teaching our kids? How are we preparing them to live the same type of independent, secure life that we're striving for today? So we're going to talk more about that. I'm also going to add on to a previous episode that I did on carrying concealed versus carrying covert when you carry a self-defense weapon. I mentioned something about the element of surprise in that episode, and I got an email from someone. I'm going to share that email with you and what they had to say, because they sent me a pretty good comment, and I like comments. I like it when people send in comments, negative, positive. It helps to shape this show. Let me go ahead and take this opportunity to let you know that this show does have some of my opinion in it. You can't do a podcast like this. You can't do a show on anything without some of your opinion coming out. And so when I talked about that subject, I talked about the element of surprise and how carrying a weapon covertly, if you have to use that, when you draw that weapon, you're surprising your attacker. And they don't know that you're armed, and that gives you a little bit of an advantage to help you defend yourself. Well, somebody had a different take on that, and they sent me an email, and so I'm going to share that with you. That'll be part of it, too. Let me give you a quote here. We're going to start off with an interesting quote. I don't know who the author is on this. It's kind of an unknown author, but it's very applicable to what we're going to talk about today. Quote, "Stimulus is what gets you started. Habit is what keeps you going and affects change." Stimulus gets you started. Habit is what keeps you going and affects change. And I thought that that was very applicable to what we're going to talk about today, and that is affecting change in our young people. Some announcements that I would like to cover. Our forum, if some of you are listening to me for the first time, thank you for tuning in for the first time. You are tuning in to a voice of reason in a chaotic world, and I hope that you will find our program not extreme, but practical common sense survivalism. Our forum is full of a lot of practical common sense, self-sufficient-minded people as well. We're up to about 45 members right now. We're getting very close to that 50-member threshold. That's the first goal. Obviously, I'd like to build this forum to thousands and thousands of people having a discussion, but my first goal has been to get it to 50. We're almost there. If you haven't joined, consider getting involved in our forum. There's been some excellent, excellent discussion going on in the last couple weeks on that forum. I'm real proud of what's happening to it, and it's starting to grow, and it's starting to grow in a very nice way. So, folks, when like-minded people get together and they talk about ideas and concepts, that's where learning takes place. You know, small minds talk about things. Average minds talk about people. Great minds talk about ideas and concepts. So if you haven't joined our forum, go to todayssurvival.com and click forum. We've also had almost 700 downloads to the podcast. So again, thank you very much. And if you haven't subscribed to our podcast, when you go to the todayssurvival.com page, you're going to see a big orange button there. You can't miss it. Click that orange button. It says subscribe. You can use a number of different readers to keep you updated. It will automatically send you updates when I post new information and post new shows. And the other announcement I want to make is Today's Survival is looking for sponsors. We're starting to grow in numbers, and if you are a company that you feel has a product or a service, I am going to want to check you out, and I am going to want to talk to you at length about it, but we are looking for sponsors if you'd like to sponsor the show. I'm going to make sponsorship complimentary for now. I'm going to limit the number of complimentary sponsors, but right now, if you would like to get some fairly decent exposure, get a hold of me. You can send me an email at bob@todayssurvival.com. And that's it for the announcements. So let's dive into our main topic matter. Let me cover this element of surprise in a self-defense situation first. And I'm going to read you the email that was sent to me. I'm going to do some paraphrasing, but it's going to be almost word for word. And again, if you go back, I believe it's episode 8, you'll have to go back and you'll have to take a look at the title where I talk about carrying concealed versus carrying covert. It might have been episode 9. Anyway, I made a point, I made a comment in that podcast that if you are carrying your weapon in a manner that where it cannot be discerned that you're carrying a weapon, and you get attacked, and you have to use that weapon, that the element of surprise when your attacker all of a sudden notices that, hey, this guy's armed, or this lady is armed, that element of surprise normally sends criminals running. And I still believe that. There's a lot of evidence to support the fact that once criminals know that you're armed, they're going to stop doing what they're doing. Sometimes a shot doesn't even have to be fired. In fact, you hope that that's not what the case is, that you don't have to use it. Those of us that carry weapons, folks, that believe in the Second Amendment and believe in our right to protect ourselves, we don't want to use these weapons. Make no mistake about it. We don't want to do it if we don't have to. Who wants to face a jury and have to justify your case as to why you defended yourself? I'll do that if I have to, but who wants to do that? But I'm going to save my life, and I'm going to save my family's life as well. So when I made that comment, what I meant was that it's a proven fact that if you present a weapon and they're not expecting you, your criminal, or your attacker is not expecting you to present a weapon, they typically move on. But let me read this email to you. This guy sent me an email, and he says, surprise is often a defensive tactic, and it's often based on unrealistic or ill-thought-out scenarios. And it seems to exist only in the mind of concealed carry firearms proponents. He says, the circumstances where several street thugs surround and taunt you for a while before robbing you comes from the movies, and it's not realistic. The mugger wants to get in and get out as fast as possible. He says, in most cases, you only have seconds to realize what's happening, make a decision, and then react. He also says, you only have seconds to react if their intent was to victimize you, and so that begs the question, do you draw your concealed carry firearm now? Or do you wait until there's an actual, visible threat? And he continues to write. He says, well, my answer is wait until there's a visible threat. Don't be stupid. Don't leave any doubt that your life is in danger. If they are not a clear threat and you pull a gun on them, you are the criminal, and you will likely forever lose your firearms rights for such a foolish action. If you don't draw and they pull a knife or a pistol when they're just a couple steps away, your only options are to draw your weapon or comply. And he says, imagine staring at the shiny blade of a knife being held by a very nervous and violent mugger. 3 inches from you or your wife's throat and having to decide whether or not you should draw from concealment. He says the element of surprise may not do you any good. In fact, the only surprising thing that might happen is that your concealed carry pistol gets taken away along with your wallet. He says the thug will later get a good chuckle with his buddies about how you brought a knife to a gunfight. He continues to write, the simple truth is that while surprise is monumentally superior tactical move, it's exclusively an offensive action and not a defensive action. Now, we're all entitled to our opinions, folks. And actually, I'm going to tell you, I have not spoken, I mean, I can't speak from experience here. Thank God I've never been attacked. And if I do, I'm going to be doing the best I can to manage that fear. I think this gentleman has sent me this email. He's right. He's right to a point. I think he's right to a point that your attackers are going to be using the element of surprise, and it's offensive for them. But I still believe that you want it to be a surprise to someone who's trying to do you harm that you are armed. You don't want to telegraph the fact that you're armed. And I think that you got a lot of criminals out there that are very brave. They're very brave at what they're trying to do. And if you're telegraphing the fact that you are armed, if you're carrying in such a way where your clothing is screaming, I have a gun, you can also be a target. And you may be a target anyway, even if you're carrying concealed. And yes, this gentleman has sent me this email. He's probably very correct. You're going to have seconds, maybe even a split second to react. And in one of my other podcasts, I talked about how to manage fear. Fear is going to set in. Your adrenaline's going to be sky high. It's going to be very difficult for you to think. But I've talked to a lot of law enforcement people. And I can back this up by telling you that I have done a lot of studying, and it's a proven fact that once somebody realizes that you are armed, they are much more likely to flee the scene rather than hang around and risk the chance of being shot. Most of these criminals, folks, are cowards. Now, I talked about martial arts for kids in the last episode. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't taken some self-defense classes in hand-to-hand combat, take some. You may never be able to pull your weapon. You conceal carry holders out there. This guy who sent me this email, there's something, he's got a good message in here. You may never be able to pull your weapon. So if that's the case, do you know what to do if you're attacked by somebody that's got a knife, somebody that has a gun? There are ways you can defuse that situation, but you've got to be trained. If you go to the posting that I did on martial arts, I put a video on there where you can look at somebody demonstrating Krav Maga. Now, I'm not saying Krav Maga is the only way to go, but there are a lot of good trainers out there to teach you what to do. There's some self-defense moves. If you keep a cool head, there's a lot of things you can do if somebody should happen to pull a weapon on you and threaten you. You may not even have to draw your weapon at all. So learn those techniques. Learn what to do. This is survival of the fittest, folks, and we do live in a dangerous world out there. But I thank this guy for sending in the email. You know, because perhaps he may have misunderstood what I was saying, but he also brings up some very, very good points, which is why I decided to include it in this podcast. So think about that. You know, you may not even ever have a chance to draw your weapon, but I still maintain that if you do and it is a surprise to your attacker, he or she is much more likely to flee. If any of you have any comments on this, if any of you have been in a situation like this, I'd like to hear about it. I hate to hear about people that have been in situations, but perhaps you have. And I'd like to hear about it. Because, again, I've mentioned before, folks, this is your show. This is your show. I'm just the guy behind the microphone. And if there's something that you can share like this gentleman did to help make this show better and to help people realize more of their potential to become survivors, I would certainly like to hear it. Send me an email, put a comment on the blog, put a comment in the forum. All right, thanks. And let's move on to the next subject here, and that's more on survival activities to teach your kids. Now, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I'm not trying to tell you how to raise your kids. Lord knows I have a lot to learn about that as well. And, you know, being a parent, I've only got one child. My wife and I are raising an 11-year-old son. I know some of you listening to this program, you have more. And, you know, one of the things when a child is born is they don't come with an instruction manual, do they? So I'm not trying to preach to you. I'm just trying to give you some suggestions, some things that you might want to consider. My mentor taught me, take the best, leave the rest. That applies to this. Take the best of what you hear. If you don't like it, throw it out. Leave it and take the best that you want, leave the rest of it, and don't use it. I'm not a child psychologist, but I do believe that there's some things that are essential to helping our young people. And they need to know what they can do if there's a bug out situation, if there's a stink hit the fan situation, if there's a local emergency, if there's a family disaster, somebody in the family loses a job, there's a death in the family, a weather event. You know, they need to know, because your kids can actually be a pretty good asset to you in an emergency situation. So let's talk about the first subject that I think that we should continue to teach our young people, and that is the value of money and cash. Now, you've heard this said before, you know, teach a kid the value of money when they're young, but I was never told, how do you do that? And I was never really told how to do that until I took the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University course. And Dave has got a couple of good ideas on how to do that that I want to share with you. So how do you teach them about the value of money? First of all, I think let them see you use cash to purchase everything. Let them see how you don't use credit. You know, leading by example. Our young people are so impressionable, and we set, folks, as the parents, we set the example for them, and there's just no two ways around that. It's just a fact of life. So let them see you pay cash for everything. My son asked me the other day why I was paying cash for something. He says, how come you don't use a credit card? He just flat out asked me. So I took that opportunity to make it a teachable moment to let him know that credit is not something that we believe in anymore. Also consider the envelope system. If some of you have taken Dave's course, you know how he talks about having different envelopes set aside for different expenditures, and that you should put the money in the envelopes, put cash in each envelope, mark the envelope for its designated purpose, and that's all you spend on that item for that month is whatever's in that envelope. And if the envelope runs dry, then you quit spending. Try this with your kids. We do this with our son. Set up three envelopes. Mark the envelopes. Mark one of them save, the other one spend, and the other one give. Now, my son has fun with this. Whenever he gets an allowance, or whenever he gets money that comes to him, no matter how it comes to him, he's required to split that money into save, spend, and give. Now, I'm not going to tell you what percentage is to set up. In other words, what percentage should they save, what should they spend, and what should they give. That's between you and your young person. But I do recommend that you set up this system. Teach them to put some in the save envelope, and that gets saved for a rainy day. Some of it in the spend envelope that they can use to spend however they see fit, and then the give envelope. Folks, get your kids used to giving. Get them used to giving back. It's a great value and it's a great virtue for them. They will have fun with this. My son likes, he's now getting into this. He wants to build up all three envelopes, his save envelope, his spend envelope, his give envelope. Now, you know, every once in a while, he wants to know, hey, Dad, you know, can I dig into my save envelope? And it's usually for some game or something that he wants to buy. And we normally have to have a discussion about that. And, you know, that's a judgment call, parents. It's a judgment call whether you want to let them dig into their savings. But if you do, think about what are you teaching them in terms of how does it translate into their survivability later on down the road. But try that three-envelope system with your kids. And, of course, might not be a bad idea for you to have that three-envelope system as well if those are some of your goals, is to save more, spend more, and give more. Speaking of savings, let me make a little side note here. I was at my bank today talking to my banker, and we were talking a little bit about the savings rate. And my banker shared some information with me. He said, you know, about 3 years ago, the average savings rate in America was minus 1.2%. Today, the average savings rate's a little over 6%. That's a good thing, and it can be a bad thing. Here's why I think that's happening. I think that there's enough people starting to wake up, and they're seeing the chaos and the ridiculous stuff that our government just absolutely just throws out there without even thinking. And people are scared. People are scared, so they're saving money, and they should. You know, it's too bad that they weren't saving a whole lot more money 2 or 3 years ago. We might not be in so much of a mess. So that's the good thing, is that people are saving money. And then I think I might give my banker the numbskull award, because then he also made a statement that I thought was interesting. He said, well, but the bad part about that is that if they're saving it, they're not spending it, and they're not pumping that money back into the economy. So again, see, my banker's even thinking that we have to all be consumers out there. We have to be buying, buying, and buying. It's not going to hurt the economy if people save more money, folks. In fact, in the long run, it's going to help the economy. The more people get out of debt, the more they save, the more disposable income that they have, the more independent people can be, the less dependent they can be on government and on higher taxation and on services that don't work. In the long run, it's my opinion, the better off that we're going to be. So again, this guy, this banker's got this consumer mentality that unfortunately we're all taught. So many of us are taught a consumer mentality, and it just drives me nuts. It's good to see that the savings rate is up. I hope it goes higher. I hope we average a 10 to 12% minimum savings rate. You know, as Dave Ramsey says, learn to live on 75% of your income. Learn to live on 3/4 of your take-home pay. Wouldn't that be great? You're saving 25% of what you're earning. So 6% is low. If we're at a 6% savings rate right now, that's low. We need to be higher than that. Okay, let's move on to the next subject about teaching our kids. How about cooking? How about teaching your kids to cook? How about teaching them to help you make meals? My parents, when I was young, they taught me how to cook. And you know, it really, really pays off. I'm the one that does most of the cooking in our family. And if I was in a survival situation where I had to cook for myself, I had to cook for my family, even if it was a survival situation where we had to go to another location or we had to bug out to someplace else, even if it's remote, I know how to cook, and I know how to cook in a lot of different ways. And I know how to generate heat in a lot of different ways. And I know how to cook foods. I can cook, you know, I can cook chicken 8-10 different ways just because that's what I learned when I was growing up. So start teaching your kids to cook. Sit down and plan out a list of easy foods and write down the steps for them. You know, most children can start learning to cook right around about age 7 or 8. Simple stuff. You know, sit down and explain the dangers of them of the kitchen. You know, teach them how to properly use a stove, how to use an oven, how to use sharp knives and things like that. You know, teach them the proper safety. There's even libraries and booksellers, and even booksellers on the internet that offer cooking books for kids that are geared towards children. So have them help you. You know, my mother used to just give us something simple, like, here, cook the green beans. And if she was going to boil the green beans, she'd teach us how to get a pot and put the water in the pot and cut the beans up carefully using a knife and putting the beans in the pot and boiling beans. Something as simple as that. Just get them in the mentality that they need to start doing some of the cooking on their own. Trust me, later on, when they become adults, that's going to pay off in a huge way. Chores, right? Okay, let's talk about the negative. Chores. Again, when you give young people chores, start slowly. But start instilling an understanding in your kids that they're able to do almost any chore in the home. Usually by age 5 or 6, most kids can do some of the simple chores. I mean, I was folding laundry, I was dusting, I was putting away silverware and stuff like that at a very, very early age. Okay, now, I don't know if I'd have, you know, using chemicals to clean the floor and stuff like that, you know. But, you know, children can learn to do some basic chores. Again, this starts to get them into a feeling, and it starts to teach them that they have to start taking some responsibility for their own upbringing. And I know we've all heard this many times, right? But folks, concentrate on helping your kids develop the responsible attitude and less of an entitlement mentality. You know, help them learn that not everything is going to be done for them for the rest of their lives. If some of you listened to episode 11 when I talked about growing up on the hobby farm, the chores were, we had a minimum of an hour and 20 minutes worth of chores twice a day. I was out in the barn for about an hour and 10 to an hour and 20 minutes before school, and I was out there again about an hour and 15 minutes after school. It can be done, folks, but if you live in suburbia and you don't live on a farm, there's household chores that you can have your young people do. Pets. Let's talk about pets. Children always want pets, right? Make them responsible for those pets. Teach them how to bathe the pet, how to groom the dog. You know, show them how to properly and safely remove ticks. Have your child start to learn commands to control your pet. Let your kids clean out the gerbil cage or feed the fish. You know, we talk about, those of us in adults, we talk about raising animals to provide food for ourselves. Start teaching your kids at an early age about raising animals. Protection. I talked about quite a bit in my last podcast about enrolling your kid in martial arts program or a boxing class or something like that. You know, enroll them with the understanding that it's not for beating up little brother or sister, but help them understand that it's to protect themselves from others who might want to harm them. For older kids, you know, teenagers, whatever, teach gun safety. You know, actually, I started learning gun safety when I was 11 years old, about my son's age. Took my first hunter safety course, I think I was 10 or 11. And my dad insisted, you know, there's no way I was going out in the field with him. Not a chance until I took hunter safety. You know, if you have weapons, show them your weapons, take them to the firing range. Let them understand what it feels like to shoot your 22 or your 12 gauge. Folks, I'm going to say something here might be controversial, but I don't care. Gun-proof your kids, don't kid-proof your guns. Let them practice at shooting targets, you know, slowly at first. But folks, the best way to create safety for your to create safe gun ownership in your house. You know, the question's always asked, well, I don't know, should I own a firearm? I don't know if I should own a firearm. I have kids. You know what the problem is many of us try to kid-proof our guns. We try to hide our guns. We try to keep our weapons away from kids. That makes them curious, folks. It just does. It makes them curious. And curiosity is what kills the cat. When your kids get curious about those guns, and dad won't tell them about them, and dad won't teach them, and dad won't let them understand how dangerous these things are and how much destructive power that these have and how we need to be very safe with these weapons, they become curious. And that's when they start to play with them. And that's when accidents happen. Take them to the firing range. Get them involved in a course. And I strongly recommend, you know, if you want your children to be safe around firearms, enroll them in a course. It's better than if mom or dad teaches them. Right? They don't want to listen to mom or dad. Enroll them in a course. Let somebody else teach them the same stuff you're going to say. But again, it has a more positive impact. So, gun-proof your kids. Don't kid-proof your guns. Excuse me. Take them hunting with you. Again, hunter safety course. You know, if you have a bow, set them up to teach them how to shoot the arrows well. Teach them proper gun safety. Teach them archery safety. And teach them that firearms are dangerous, but if they're handled properly, they can be a useful tool and a necessity in a survival situation. There's no reason, in my humble opinion, that if a firearm is kept well secured in a sensible manner in your home, that it should be a danger to a child. I firmly believe it means that you failed to teach them properly. Again, that's my opinion. If I get blasted for it, fine. Send on the email, send on the comments. I'll take your comments up under consideration, and I'll look at them objectively. And if some of your comments or some of the things that you want to say make sense, I'll include them on another show. Okay, let's move on to bartering. You know, as odd as it may sound, teach your kids to barter. Take your child to a garage sale. Take them to a flea market. At any age, you can do this. Teach them how to go to a garage sale and negotiate. You know, teach them good manners when approaching the seller. But teach them how to negotiate. Tell them about good deals. Tell them how to find good deals. How to ask for a good deal properly. Tell them how they might find things at a later time and that they don't have to buy things right away. So, you know, if some of you like to go to garage sales and flea markets, take your kids with you. Teach them. Let's talk about first aid. It's another thing. You know, let's talk about teaching our kids first aid. You know, about as young as 5 years old. About 5 or 6 years old, I started to learn how to put Band-Aids on wounds. You know, get a first aid manual. Teach your kids the proper way to care for cuts, scrapes. Let them know what alcohol and peroxide are used for and other medical treatment products that are in the first aid kit. Show them the difference between when to use a large butterfly bandage, or show them how to use gauze and tape. Teach them the right way to take someone's temperature. Explain when it's time to call the medical professionals to help, or explain to them how you might be in a situation where there are no medical services available, and then tell them what should be done. You know, I'll tell you something I struggled with when I was a kid is I used to get real woozy at the sight of blood. When I saw blood, man, I freaked out. If you had a kid like that, help them get over that fear as best as possible by helping them do some first aid themselves. When they cut themselves, help them calm down and help them do their own first aid. You have to do what you fear most to get over fear. And it starts at a young age. Emergency plans. Are you including your kids in your emergency plans? You know, I think we've all heard that you should have some emergency plans in writing and that you should have a family meeting and all the family members should know what are you going to do in a certain emergency, and you should have a plan A, you should have a plan B, you should have a plan C as to how you're going to handle different emergencies. Have you included your kids in those emergency plans? Folks, one thing about teaching a child about survival is tell them the truth. Tell them the truth about what dangers are out there. Kids can handle the truth. My son is worried about tornadoes. And my son the other night brought up the fact that he was worried about tornadoes. Now, here in North Texas, we're not really in the tornado season right now. But, you know, he's worried about it. It's a valid fear. And, you know, could a tornado happen? Sure, it could happen. So we have educated him. We've sat down. We've talked about what our plans are, what we're going to do if we know that a tornado is coming. And we're going to go ahead and review that again here in the next couple days. It will calm them down if you help them understand that you have a plan and that they're part of the plan. Give them a copy of the plan in writing. Our disaster and emergency plan is in writing. Our son has a copy of that he keeps on his little desk in his room. Okay, give them an assignment. When you're making your emergency plans, give your children an assignment. Say, hey, look, you know what? If a certain weather disaster happens, if a tornado happens, here's what your assignment's going to be. Your assignment is going to be to do A, B, or C if something happens. That feels like now, okay, they have got some control. You know, and one of the reasons why kids get afraid is they feel like they're out of control. You give them an assignment as to what to do in an emergency situation. Now they feel like they're in control. Of course, you know, parents, it's going to be up to you to make sure that gets done. It's going to be able to make sure, you know, up to you to make sure that if it doesn't get done, that everybody's safe and it does. But at least now that they've got some ownership of it, they're going to be less afraid. The other thing I want to talk about that you should have a discussion with your kids is communication methods. Talk to them about some of the modern technology. Talk to them about how to use their cell phone in an emergency situation. One of my earlier episodes, if you haven't had a chance to listen to how to use modern technology in an emergency situation, go back and look at that. Go to todayssurvival.com and look up that episode and listen to that. You know, talk to them about modern ways to use technology to survive. Now, you know, if you're in a wilderness situation, you know, cell phones may not work. But, you know, if you're in a situation where cell phones do work, they can be a very, very useful tool. But it can be a tragic mistake to rely on them solely, you know, for communication. So you need to teach your kids alternate ways of communicating. But have those discussions with them as to how they can use all these things that they normally play games with, right? They're normally on your BlackBerries and iPhone playing games. Teach them how they can use those in an emergency as well. Another thing to talk about with your kids, pocket knives. A pocket knife is a great thing. Now, it's your judgment call, folks. It's your judgment call when you want to start letting them own one and use one. I'm not going to tell you what age or what stage in your child's life, but I don't care if it's a boy or girl. Teach them to start doing things with tools, survival tools, like just a simple pocket knife. Help them learn how to use one. Help them learn how to do it safely. Let them explore what they can do with it. And again, some of you might be thinking, oh my God, gee, I can't, my kid with a knife? Oh no. Don't worry, it's not that bad. If you teach them how to use it safely, they're going to be fine. If you don't want them carrying it all the time, then leave it in their bug out bag. Your kid doesn't have a bug out bag? They should. All right, we'll talk a little bit about that some more in another episode. But, you know, you can read all you want on preparing bug-out bags. Each member of your family, each child should have their own emergency bag. So let them keep the knife in the bag if you're not comfortable with them carrying it. But teach them what they can do with it. And that leads me into shooting sports, as I touched on a little bit earlier. When you want to get kids involved in the shooting sports, the younger, the better, as long as they are safe. I'm going to tell you a little story about that, and then we're going to move on. I shoot a lot of IDPA. IDPA stands for International Defensive Pistol Association. In one of my other podcasts, I talk a little bit about IDPA. Now, it's not combat training. Okay, it's competitive pistol shooting, but it does give you some pretty good education on how to safely handle a weapon, how to draw it safely. And one of the things I love about IDPA is they are absolute sticklers for safety. You'll get disqualified and you'll get your butt thrown out of there faster than you can blink an eye if you are unsafe with that weapon. Well, in the club that I shoot, there's a gentleman that comes and he brings his 11-year-old grandson every time he comes. It's grandfather and grandson spending a Saturday morning at shooting. It's great to see. And you ought to see this young 11-year-old young man. This guy comes, he shoots a Smith & Wesson M&P 40 caliber pistol, full size, and he can handle it very, very well. Do things like that. Okay? So if you go to shooting clubs and you go to the range and stuff like that, bring your kids with you. All right, that will help them learn what they need to know about weapons. And so that pretty much wraps up some of the major points that I wanted to discuss in talking to your children. And so we talked about several things, and we talked about basically five keys to teaching kids responsibility and self-sufficiency. And that was start as early as possible, Tell your kids that you're going to start doing things differently. Tell them you're going to start living in a different way. Identify responsibilities and use responsible language. You know, I didn't mention this. When you give your kid an assignment as to what to do in an emergency situation, or even if it's just simple chores, give them positive reinforcement. Tell them things like, hey, way to go. Nice way to follow through on your responsibility. You know, I'm giving you this reward because you did a good job of following through and carrying through your responsibility. We talked about the power of example. You know, next time your child says to you, where are you going, Dad? Say, hey, I'm going to work. That's my responsibility. And we talked about accountability. Doing and saying things like, you're getting this reward because you did a good job of planting those tomatoes. You're getting this reward because you did a good job of helping us cook yesterday. Things like that. We also talked a little bit about the element of surprise, and I clarified myself as to what I meant in that previous podcast. And also, we discussed how to teach kids a little bit more about modern survival and using technology and the value of money and the value of cooking and doing chores, raising animals, bartering, first aid, so on and so forth. Now, it's up to you to utilize these techniques and begin shaping the next generation of survivors. But folks, let's do it. Let's start shaping the next generation. They need us. They need us real bad. And if you go back to episode 11 and you listen to my story, I am in this mindset because it's what was taught to me when I was a kid. And they're going to need it, especially with what our young people are going to be saddled with. What they're going to be saddled with from our government and the massive debt and the total chaos that's going on right now, folks, you're going to do them a huge disservice if you don't start teaching your young people about this kind of stuff. Because they are going to get saddled and they're going to get blitzed with stuff we've never seen. And who knows what type of conflicts they're going to endure. You know, whether it's a breakdown or whether it's a lack of ability to get key services in a stink hit the fan situation. Or if it's another financial meltdown, which is coming, or even if it's a breakdown in the just-in-time food delivery system, it's going to be trouble for our young people if we don't start getting them involved. So set that power of example and use some of what I talked to you about, because I'm telling you, it will work. You will start to notice a difference in your young people. And thanks again for tuning in on this, because I think it was a very, very important subject to talk about. And I think we're going to do a huge disservice to our kids and our grandkids if we don't start right now helping them learn these ideas and techniques. So this has been Bob Main with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live that life that you want and to strengthen your resolve in good times or bad. And thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.